Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kudelska. A conservative student group at the University of Wyoming has become a significant presence in campus politics.
I think that they have increasingly and consistently been a more organized force on campus.
Almost a third of families with single moms live in poverty in the state. One organization is helping to change that.
I thought about, you know, if I could get the training for free, then I could move myself and my son up and I wouldn't have to go job to job.
And we learn about how a couple decides to buy a record shop in Cheyenne, despite competition from national chains and a tough environment for small shops.
One day the owner said, "Hey, have you ever thought about owning a record store?" And again, it had always been my dream, so we made it come true.
Those stories and more coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News.
The Wyoming Public Radio app delivers great music 24/7. Stream Wyoming Sounds, Jazz Wyoming, and Classical Wyoming. Download the Wyoming Public Radio app at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
You already listen to public radio, but what if public radio could listen back? It does on the NPR One app. Hear local, national, and international news plus podcasts based on what you like. The more you listen, the more it gets to know you. Download NPR One at your app store.
Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kudelska. Wyoming voters will have to navigate some new rules this year. The absentee voting period has shrunk, and crossover voting has been outlawed. That means that if you want to vote in a primary election this year, you'll have to register as a Republican or Democrat by May 15th. Wyoming Public Radio's Jeff Victor sat down with Albany County Clerk Kayla White to learn what's different about this year's election cycle.
Kayla White, thanks for sitting down with me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So the reason we're talking today, so many months before the election, is that there are some new rules that voters might not be familiar with. There was a new law passed in 2023 designed to stop crossover voting or voting in a primary for the party that you're not usually affiliated with. That was the idea behind the bill, but what does that mean for the everyday voter? How will this election be different?
Wyoming is a same-day voter registration state. That has not changed. If you're a new registrant, you can still come in and register on election day. You can make changes to your voter registration on election day, but you cannot make changes to your party. That is the big change. Historically, voters are used to being able to go in on election day and saying, "Oh, I want to vote for this candidate, so I'm going to switch my party." They cannot do that any longer. So if you are already a registered voter in Albany County and you want to change your party, you will have to do that before May 15th.
My colleague David Dudley reported that many voters have been purged from voter rolls. These are people, maybe people listening, who were registered to vote. Maybe they voted in 2020 in the last presidential election, but they've been removed. Can you refresh us on what's going on there?
Yep. So Wyoming has a purge process. So what that means, it sounds so bad when you say purge, but it's a way to keep our voter rolls clean. So every year or every 2 years, purging happens every year, but it's really historically every 2 years when you have an election. So if you didn't vote in the 2022 general election, your name would be on the purge notice. So you would get a postcard from our office stating that you did not vote in the 2022 election. And if you would like to remain registered, you just have to contact our office. We will keep you registered. There's a 20-day time frame. And if you did not contact us in that 20-day time frame, you got purged from the voter roll. So basically all that means is that you were deactivated. You can still come in and re-register. It's not stopping you from registering again. You just have to go through the process of re-registering is what you have to do.
So if you last voted in 2020, you'll need to register to vote again. And soon, if you want to vote in the primary, if you last voted 2 years ago, then you're still registered to vote. But if you want to change your party affiliation, you should do that before May 15th.
Correct. May 15th is the last day you can do it. So you can come in on May 15th, but on May 16th, when filing starts, you're done.
So what else should voters know heading into this election season? Any other changes or anything else you want to share as an election official?
I think the biggest thing, other than the party change, is that absentee voting. So, of course, Wyoming is a no-excuse absentee. Historically, absentee voting started 45 days prior to every election. In 2023, legislation changed to limit the time frame of absentee voting. Overseas military voters still have that 45 days, but regular absentee voters only have 28 days now to vote. So if you're going to request your absentee ballot, you can do that all the way up until the day before the election, but just note that your time frame has decreased. So as you all may know, with the mail system changing, that we don't have the distributing center over in Cheyenne anymore, all the mail goes through Denver. Your time frame might be a little less. The mail system it's great when it works, but it can have a little lag time there. So just note that for the primary election, the first day to absentee vote is July 23rd. And then for the general election, the first day to absentee vote will be October 8th. So your time frames are just shorter now.
So in closing, I'm hoping you can make the case for electoralism or the idea that people should even vote at all. I certainly have friends who have said, you know, they don't want to go to the trouble of voting. If they like Trump, they know he's probably going to win Wyoming. If they like Biden, they know their vote isn't really going to change that. If they hate both of them, they're saying, why should I bother going out on election day at all? What would you say to that?
I think the biggest thing is that they're not the only candidates on the ballot. We have some, you know, we have local candidates that are up. We have city council, county commissioner. I think it's important to know that your vote counts, even though you may feel that way. Yes, Wyoming is a red state. If Trump's on the ballot, Wyoming's probably going to be, and that's okay. But that doesn't mean that you can't express how you feel through voting. And it is really important to vote for those local candidates because they're really the ones that make the changes in your everyday life. So that's kind of my pitch on that, I guess.
Well, Kayla White, thanks for catching me up on all things voter registration today.
Thank you.
Earlier this month, Mexican officials opened an immigrant resource center in Jackson, specifically to help people from Tlaxcala. About 30% of Teton County's population is estimated to be Latino, and many of them come from this small Mexican state. Jackson Hole Community Radio's Hannah Merzbach reports. It's just one way residents are connecting to their roots.
Paula Zabalsa from the Mexican Immigrant Assistance Department leads the opening ceremony for the office, called Casa Tlaxcala.
Casa Tlaxcala es la casa de todos. Gracias.
The resource center is everyone's house, she says to a small crowd at the co-working space where it's located. But it's specifically aimed at supporting the about 1,000 Jackson families with roots in Tlaxcala by offering immigration help and reuniting families.
The governor of Tlaxcala, Lorena Cuellar, wants them to feel like they have the government of Tlaxcala near to them.
The region is home to one of the largest Tlaxcaltecan populations in the country, second only to New York and California, where the two other offices of this kind are located. Over the last few decades, people moved to the resort community in the Tetons after word spread in small Mexican towns that there's lots of job opportunities here, and it's a good place to raise a family.
I think that they feel at home. Yes, I think they do.
It's home, but life could be easier. Many people work 2 to 3 jobs to afford the high cost of living, and it's often too expensive for many to visit family members back home. Or, depending on their immigration status, there's often a risk of not being let back into the U.S. Until now, the closest place to get documents needed for the immigration process was in Salt Lake City.
4 hours away from here, winter season is kind of hard because of the driving, the snow.
That's Marcela Badillo, who moved from Tlaxcala over 20 years ago. In honor of the office opening, Badillo is dressed in a pink floral Mexican blouse and a beaded necklace and earrings she said she bought in Tlaxcala. She says she just recently became a citizen, which required countless hours of driving to Utah to get documents like birth certificates. Once she became a citizen, she was finally able to travel back to Mexico.
To show to your family, to your kids, oh, I come from this, and show them your old house. It's amazing.
Now, Badillo says she hopes having the office in Jackson will speed up the immigration process for others and help them stay connected to their homeland.
It's huge. I feel so proud to be from Tlaxcala, but also I am feeling so proud to be Jackson citizen.
For families who can't go to Mexico, the Immigrant Assistance Office has created a program called Uniendo Historias, or Uniting Stories. It helps bring seniors from Mexico to their relatives in Jackson. The same week the office opened, 10 seniors reunited with their families at a Catholic church in town. Families cluster together, hugging and crying. One of them, Fran Perez, picks up a bag holding about a pound of soil and hands it to her young great-grandson, who she's meeting for the first time. The family says these are the roots of his land in Tlaxcala. The visiting seniors gathered the soil from the highest peak in the central Mexican state. It's been 19 years since the family has been together, and Perez, who's nearing 80, says she wasn't sure she'd live to see the day. Her daughter, Susana Saldana, moved to the area over 2 decades ago for job opportunities and to give her sons a better life.
I have too much emotion, anxiety, so happiness. I don't know how to express my feelings.
Thanks to the program from the Mexican government, their family now has a month together. And soon, more residents could have that opportunity, like Marcelino Vasquez.
I haven't had a chance to meet my mom for the last 20 years.
Vasquez, who's wearing a flat-bill cap and has a thick black mustache, says he didn't know about this program until recently.
We want to meet our family, you know, like, but sometimes it's impossible. But they are making now the way easy to meet our families.
Vasquez says he plans to talk to the office to figure out if he can also bring his mom to Jackson. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Merzbach in Jackson.
Stay with us. Next, we go to the University of Wyoming and learn about the student government. This is Open Spaces.
Did you know that all 6 episodes of Human Nature's latest season are out right now? That's right. Season 9 of our award-winning podcast has a little bit of everything. A Wyoming man who spent his summer working as a night shepherd in Switzerland.
All I could hear was my breathing and the steps, and everything was so dark. And I just thought, okay, this must be what it's like to be an astronaut on the moon.
The story of one of the biggest animal rescues in history.
And I picked up the phone and they said, when can you get here? And so the next day, I actually took a plane because it never occurred to me what was ahead for me over the next few weeks.
And a woman who followed the gray whale migration hundreds of miles with her son.
I was exhausted one evening, fed up of trying to work. I'd had a really bad day. And so I was like, right, I'm not working. I'm going to read about whales.
Find Human Nature on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Human Nature, one word, one N.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. In their most recent election, University of Wyoming students chose new leadership to represent them. Members of student government, both past and present, saw this election as a microcosm of the partisan debates and influences now descending on campuses. Wyoming Public Radio's Jeff Victor reports.
The Associated Students of the University of Wyoming, or ASUW, is the university's student government, and it does a lot more than most people, even most students, realize. ASUW commands an annual budget of $1.1 million. It maintains full-time staff and doles out more than $100,000 a year in scholarships. When Hunter Swilling served as president 3 years ago, the student government increased scholarships, started paying its senators, and tackled some very student-centric issues, like food insecurity and rental regulations.
I guess ultimately for me, it just comes back to the idea that ASUW should serve as many students as possible.
During his tenure, Swilling noticed a shift from talking about nonpartisan student issues to having debates on more national topics, debates that increasingly fell along political party lines.
I think it's been a relatively long change over a long period of time, insofar as we've seen increasing polarization both nationally and within the state of Wyoming.
Campus issues like student housing are still central to ASUW. But Swilling says in the last 2 years, a conservative student group has started to change the conversation on campus.
They were a relatively small student organization, and they had no elective representation in ASUW.
That student organization is known as Turning Point USA, and Turning Point's UW chapter has been increasing its visibility on campus, winning ASUW Senate seats, and even making moves for the ASUW presidency.
I think that they have increasingly and consistently been a more organized force on campus.
Turning Point is a conservative national organization with local affiliates at universities across the U.S. Its stated goal is winning back campuses from the liberals who it says controls them, sometimes via student elections. Turning Point also runs a website accusing left-wing professors of indoctrinating students, including one UW professor. Political science major Gabe Saint serves as Turning Point's chapter president at UW, but he says he doesn't identify as a conservative.
Just an American, just a Christian. I really don't like ideology. I think people need to be practical and understand that human beings are eternal and nuanced and have dignity and value.
Saint says he wants to promote grace, unity, and charity, and he says his goal is not division.
It's been a little bit more partisan this year, especially when we started out. People didn't really know how to approach those. I'm the Turning Point guy, so I'm big, scary, conservative. But, you know, after I was like, guys, I'm here to preach, talk about unity and grace, because that's how we should be approaching politics.
But according to current UW student and former ASUW Senator Tanner Ewalt, the causes that Turning Point pushes are not just talk.
They go to the media and they say, we just want to have a conversation. And then behind the scenes, well, not even behind the scenes, in public, they're supporting people who say stuff like Michael Mose. We are calling for the elimination of public transgenders. That's genocide. That's genocidal rhetoric. That's not a conversation.
Ewalt points to an event hosted by Turning Point last fall, featuring former NCAA Division I swimmer Riley Gaines. Gaines advocates against transgender inclusion in women's sports and in broader society. Ewalt calls that type of rhetoric divisive and says it can even lead to violence.
They want a safe space on campus where they can say what they want, they can provoke outrage in other people, and then they can hide their hand and say, well, they're throwing stones at us, I don't know why. They know what they're doing.
But Saint doesn't think Turning Point should be viewed as divisive.
And people in ASUW are just saying, we can't have Turning Point here. All they do is spew hate, and they're not good for discourse. And I was like, that's ridiculous. We're just here trying to talk, and we don't attack anybody like that.
This year, Saint ran for ASUW president. The Freedom Caucus, a voting bloc in the Wyoming legislature, made up of the state's most conservative House reps, got involved. They endorsed Saint for president. It's the first time a state legislative group has endorsed a candidate. In a close final round of voting, however, Saint lost to Cameron Murfitt. Freedom Caucus Chairman John Baer says he and his fellow lawmakers wanted to encourage students who were bold enough to bring conservative ideas to campus. The endorsement came after a meeting with Turning Point students.
We heard story after story about how conservative students are having their voices stifled on campus, and how it's a pretty hostile environment for them.
Endorsements are common for ASUW races, but those endorsements almost always come from student groups and organizations, says former Senator Ewalt.
I think what the Freedom Caucus is doing and has made very obvious is wanting to not have ASUW be that. They want it to be a new battleground for the culture war.
But Representative Baer says college is not what it used to be, and that conservative voices are being suppressed, while leftist voices are elevated.
Over the last several decades, universities have been hotbeds for training political activists for the left.
During the last legislative session, the Freedom Caucus helped defund the university's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Its allies also tried to eliminate courses in the Gender and Women's Studies program. In both cases, right-wing lawmakers claimed that UW was indoctrinating students, coercing them to take on left-wing beliefs. That's why Baer says it's important to support groups like Turning Point.
you know, that wasn't necessary before because the university itself provided a open forum, if you will, for ideas from both sides of the political spectrum. And I think that that's being stifled now.
But according to a student survey from last year, the vast majority of respondents reported that UW classrooms are places of, quote, free and open intellectual inquiry. Outside the classroom, according to the same survey, most said they feel free to engage in discussion and even debate about controversial topics. UW also very recently reiterated its commitment to political neutrality, in a statement backed by students, faculty, and staff. This contention between a conservative party and a university is playing out in many other states as well. That's why former UW student Ty McNamee was not surprised to learn that the Freedom Caucus had endorsed a candidate in a student government election. Nor was he surprised by the attacks on DEI and gender studies at his alma mater.
College campuses are sort of this breeding ground of ideas that need to be talked about, but conservative political leaders thinking they need to combat the discussion of those ideas and anything that they don't agree with.
McNamee grew up in Shoshone, knowing he was gay, but afraid to admit it. He was just a child when Matthew Shepard, a gay University of Wyoming student, was tortured and killed in Laramie.
Matthew Shepard's murder exacerbated and solidified a lot of things that you were already very scared about, because you could be the next person who undergoes such a horrific murder.
McNamee hid who he was and lived in fear that his secret would be discovered. That is, until he started at the University of Wyoming in 2008.
It was oddly a liberal place compared to my hometown. And so in a way, I was able to finally like come out to a lot of people. And by the end of my time at the University of Wyoming, come out to most everybody.
As a student, McNamee got involved with ASUW, first as a senator, then as vice president in 2011. Looking back, McNamee says ASUW was political, but not partisan. He says it was impossible to keep politics out completely, but also that that was okay. For McNamee, UW was a place to explore those ideas, and the first place he could fully be himself while exploring those ideas. Those explorations never stopped. Today, McNamee studies rural higher education as an assistant professor at the University of Mississippi.
We've seen how political leaders use higher education as a tool to say that we're indoctrinating students with certain ideas. And it's been like this for decades, where you say you go to college and you become liberal or you become woke or whatever it is. And in recent years, that has continued to rear its head.
McNamee says what's new is that those claims of indoctrination are now having real effects on university programming. And those who once found freedom on campus are worried what might be lost in freedom's name. For Wyoming Public Radio, this is Jeff Victor.
As the spring sun warms the long frozen plains of southeastern Wyoming, the UW football team has just wrapped up its spring camp, leaving fans eager and optimistic for the upcoming season. Spring camp is standard for college football programs across the country and typically lasts 1 month. It gives players new and old the opportunity to get back into the swing of things. Wyoming Public Radio's Weston Pope takes us to a recent scrimmage.
The running backs are working on their agility, balance, and footwork as they take handoffs and run through tackling dummies. This year's spring camp is especially crucial given that the program is under new leadership with head coach Jay Salvell. Salvell is free to experiment with the roster and playbook to see what works best while analyzing strengths and weaknesses on the team. Starting quarterback Evan Svoboda reflects on spring camp.
You know, definitely ups and downs, kind of got a little slow start going, but just, you know, got to take care of the ball on offense. Can't have so many, you know, the football on the ground so many times.
Taking care of the ball is something Wyoming is good at. Last season, the Cowboys finished the season tied for 7th place in turnover margin. As a team, the Cowboys only turned the ball over 11 times.
Obviously, the penalties. Can't have penalties hold us back.
The Cowboys were one of the least penalized teams in the nation, committing only 49 penalties through 12 games in 2023. The maturation and leadership of the quarterback is extremely important when it comes to success on the field. Svoboda was second string last season behind Andrew Peasley, who graduated last year. Svoboda joined the Pokes in 2022 and says this practice is huge.
I think spring ball is a great time to kind of just, you know, dissect the game. At least this is from the quarterback standpoint. Dissect the game, see what our defense is doing. What are they showing us?
And Svoboda says the Cowboys defense will push the offense to be better.
And, you know, having the best defense in the Mountain West, it's, you know, it's going to make us the best offense in the Mountain West. So that's, you know, that's always fun to go up against them, those guys, and compete.
48. That's where Wyoming ranked last season in terms of overall defense out of 131 college football teams. Coach Salvel, who was a defensive coordinator at the time, fielded a stifling defense that allowed only 360 yards per game. Meanwhile, the Cowboys' overall offense ranked 108 last season, putting them in the lower quadrant in the nation. As the old saying goes, iron sharpens iron. The Cowboys used a lot of tempo and ran a no-huddle offense during their spring scrimmage, something Wyoming fans have not seen in a long time. At 7,220 feet, a hurry-up offense can be lethal for opposing defenses. Svoboda says it will give them an advantage.
I love it. I think it's going to give us such an edge on other teams, especially at this elevation. Like, not only do guys have to come up here and, you know, kind of struggle to breathe sometimes, but imagine us pushing the tempo and then they have to keep up with us. So I think that's a super, super big, you know, competitive edge that we might have against a lot of teams.
Once Jay Salvel took over the football program, his first hire was offense coordinator Jay Johnson. Johnson left Michigan State, where he held the same position. Jay Johnson will look to reinvent the Cowboys offense by using a no-huddle format. Not only have there been changes to the staff, but there's also been massive changes to the Cowboys gear. Former head coach Craig Bull implemented a no-name on the back of UW jersey's policy. Coach Salvel reversed that policy.
We're not going to win a game or lose a game because we got names on the back of a jersey next year. Okay? We're not going to become a team of individuals because we got names on the back of a jersey.
Coach Bull believed players would adopt an individual mentality rather than a team mentality. Salvel says other teams are able to play as a team and have success while doing it.
Last time I checked, they have names on the back of the jerseys at Alabama, and they get really talented people to play together as a team.
There's a lot to be excited about when a college sports program hires some new faces. Anxious excitement, anticipation, and bold expectations all come with the territory. The Cowboys will be back in action late summer for fall camp. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Weston Pope.
An organization focuses on helping single moms who live in poverty. That's up next on Open Spaces.
Hi, Daryl Brogdon here, host of the Retro Cocktail Hour, inviting you to join me for the music that's always served up shaken, not stirred. Whether it's TV crime jazz or tiki tunes, space age bachelor pad music, swinging soundtracks, or other incredibly strange music, it's on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Saturday night at 6 on Wyoming Public Radio.
This is Classical Wyoming, with great music 24 hours every day. If you would like to see the playlist, go to classicalwyoming.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Camila Kadalska. Mother's Day is coming up, but did you know that almost a third of families with single moms live in poverty in the state? Climb Wyoming is helping to change that.
We know that we've served over 10,000 moms and 25,000 of their children. That's an insane amount of people.
That's more than the third largest city in Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman has more on how the organization has worked to break cycles of generational poverty for almost 40 years.
In downtown Laramie, there's a blue building with tall windows tucked between two local staples, Front Street Tavern and Lovejoy's Bar and Grill. And while it might not look like much from the outside, upstairs is the office for an organization that's had a big impact for many, Climb Wyoming.
On average, women are making about $550 a month before they come to Climb, which is forcing parents to make impossible choices for themselves and for their families.
That's Katie Hogarty, Climb's CEO. Her office is brightly lit and looks out onto the train tracks running through town. A white noise machine whirs out in the hallway.
Women are significantly increasing their wages post-program, upwards of $2,000 a month, which makes a huge difference in their lives and the lives of their kids.
But it's way more than just a 12-week job training for community-specific needs, things like truck driving or nursing assistant positions. It's holistic, with an emphasis on mental health and how poverty impacts the brain.
The women that come through the program oftentimes come in a triggered state when they are panicked about feeding their kids or their own physical safety or where they're going to spend the night or how they're going to get to work.
Moms receive individual and group counseling as part of the program. Molly Kruger first came to Climb as a therapist and is now the COO. She says the model is designed to support the growth of executive functioning skills, like planning, organization, and emotional regulation.
If the schedule changes, we're going to talk about it. If there's conflict, the culture is that we're really naming it and talking about it to really work through in a different way than maybe moms ever have.
75% of participants report increased executive functioning skills after the program. And the benefits don't stop there.
Not only have they done a lot of work to build those skills for themselves, now they're passing them on to their children.
The program has a graduation rate of 98% and also has locations in Cheyenne, Casper, Rock Springs, Jackson, and Gillette. For Climb graduate Jenny Armejo, that community was a big highlight.
It was really nice to connect with other single moms, you know, that were going similar stuff that I was dealing with. How to balance life and how to do jobs.
Armejo is Northern Arapaho and from the Wind River Reservation. She lives in Laramie now and heard about Climb through Facebook about 6 years ago.
I thought about, you know, if I could get the training for free, then I could move myself and me my son up and I wouldn't have to go job to job.
When Armejo's son was little, she was going to school for nursing. But there was a lot to juggle.
Then I quit school for a while because I couldn't afford to live life and then school at the same time, plus be a mom.
She pieced together work at fast food restaurants and laundromats, but the long hours made it hard to spend time with her kid. Through Climb, Armejo got her Class B commercial driver's license, and it's made a difference.
I know I won't go without a job, that me and my son won't ever have the fear of knowing I might not know where to work. We might have to move.
Armejo says the program gave her the confidence to keep growing, even after it was over.
I challenged myself and the confidence, and I went and got my Class A. So I drive bigger trucks now.
Armejo lights up when she talks about her son, who's now almost 15. But he's got a classic teenage boy response to her job.
Oh, that's cool, Mom. That's all he says. I'm like, does your friends know I'm a truck driver? He's like, why would they? I'm like, I don't know, because that's awesome.
Corinne Schmidt is with the Wyoming Department of Family Services, which administers time or income-limited programs like SNAP food assistance. She says Climb's approach and the approach of other similar intergenerational programs
become part of a wonderful cycle of learning that I think addresses the situation in front of the parent, but also helps to give all the children living in the home the opportunity to see what it's like to be successful as well.
It's hard to quantify the benefits of Climb, but CEO Hogarty says the program has saved the state of Wyoming roughly $120 million as a result of decreased dependence on public programs like SNAP.
Almost 80% of our participants have reduced their food stamp usage. The access to private health care about triples, so families are able to take care of their health.
Climb was recently selected as one of the 15 top organizations with an impact on two generations in the country. They're excited to keep sharing their best practices on a bigger scale, but they plan to keep their focus close to home. On Climb participants in Wyoming, like Jenny Armejo.
They taught me that I am worth it and I am, you know, worth it to find what I need in life.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman. Mom and pop shops across the U.S. have been hit with a 1-2 punch from online services like Amazon and closures due to the pandemic. While 1 in 5 small businesses fail within a year of opening, half shutter within 5 years, according to a report by Forbes. In Wyoming, more than 3,000 small businesses opened across the state between March 2021 and 2022. During that time, almost 2,500 others closed. But those numbers didn't stop Chuck and Kay Bybee, partners in marriage and business, from fulfilling their dream of owning a record shop. Wyoming Public Radio's David Dudley reports the Bybee's dream came true last year when they bought Downtown Vinyl in Cheyenne, where former owner Don McKee sold vintage records and books for 18 years.
But before we get into that, let's rewind to Morrill, Nebraska, 1983. It's prom night at Morrill High School. Chuck and Kay Bybee danced to many songs that night, but only one remains in their collective memory. The teenagers had fallen in love. Even then, Kay knew she wanted to own a record shop. She shared her passion for records and music with Chuck.
She really opened my eyes to a lot of different things. I think I was more just all country at that time, and then she opened my eyes.
They married after graduating high school. Chuck joined the U.S. Air Force and was trained to do body work on helicopters. Kay went to work as a secretary at F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne. So, Kay's dream of owning a record shop would have to wait. Fast forward to 1990, when Chuck was deployed to Desert Storm. This was the Walkman era, and he had only a few cassettes with him. One day, as he was preparing to enter the war zone, he played a song that still conjures memories of that time in his life.
We were waiting in what was called the neutral zone. We were going to get ready to go into Iraq. As we were getting ready to leave, I started playing AC/DC Thunderstruck. So every time Thunderstruck comes on, it takes me right back there.
Kay says that they were apart for much of that year and the years that followed, going up to 6 months without seeing one another while Chuck was deployed to various war zones in the Middle East. The Bybee spent the next 30 years working, traveling, and collecting vinyl. They were looking for a place to settle into retirement when, last year, the longtime owner of Downtown Vinyl, Don McKee, asked Kay if she'd like to buy the store. She knew the store well. Downtown Vinyl had been an institution in Cheyenne's music scene for nearly 2 decades, a staple for rare records. The Bybees were among McKee's best customers. They loved the store. After some discussion, they accepted the offer.
It's always been her dream. And when does a person actually get to live their dream? So I'm like, oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, we're going to do this.
McKee announced his retirement in a Facebook post that drew waves of appreciation from the community. Today, Chuck says that Manfred Mann's Runner captures the spirit of this time in their lives.
It's about your whole life. You know, it's running the race and then passing on the flame.
McKee had passed the torch. Now, Kay strives to keep it lit. Each day when she opens the shop, Kay says she's living her dream. But it's not without risk. She knows that consumers can find almost any record on Amazon. She also knows the grim stats about small businesses. But she's learned something new, too.
It was scary. It really was. You kind of hope that people want to buy local. And that's been, I think, the best thing for us, is people do want to buy local.
The Bybees have over 9,000 records between them, so they're never short on stock. When asked what her favorite record in the shop is, Kay pulls a beautiful yellow record from a sleeve. It's a UK pressing of Elton John's Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. When asked what her favorite song is, Kay pauses.
Whoa, that's a toughie. I think, honestly, Funeral for a Friend. It's not one that's played very much, but it's just a, I don't know, it's just, it kind of speaks to me.
Kay adds that when she dies, she hopes someone will play Funeral for a Friend for her.
And play it loud.
Chuck carefully places the record on the turntable. He presses play. The arm hovers over the yellow vinyl, then drops slowly. The needle finds its groove as the record spins. Kay closes her eyes and listens as she waits for the first customer of the day to walk through the door. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm David Dudley.
Up next, we hear from a local author. This is Open Spaces.
I'm Grady Kirkpatrick, inviting you to join me for Wyoming Sounds. Along with your favorites, you'll discover plenty of new music. We bring you NPR news updates, weather, and we'll let you know about events happening around Wyoming. Wyoming Sounds from 9 to noon on Wyoming Public Radio and 24/7 online at wyomingsounds.org.
This time on The Modern West, the story of two wolves in Colorado's North Park and how the community is, or is not, coming to terms with their presence.
I think wolves represent a lot of what farming and ranching is about, which is like you have no control ultimately.
Wolves 2101 and 2301. It's episode 3 in our series, High Altitude Tales. Find it under podcasts at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Wyoming native Walt Gasson has published award-winning essays in Wyoming Wildlife Magazine, High Country News, and Trout Magazine. They're now included in a new book titled Craven Creek. Wyoming Public Radio's Grady Kirkpatrick recently spoke with the author about the essays.
Walt Gasson, you're a fourth-generation Wyoming native, and these essays were inspired by your family and place and storytelling around southwestern Wyoming. There's some interesting Wyoming history in this collection. Let's start with Craven Creek near the little town of Opal, Wyoming.
Craven Creek is really not much of a going concern, quite honestly, Grady. It's a small stream north of Opal, Wyoming. Opal, Wyoming is a very, very small community. And the thing about Craven Creek that ties it to our family is that our family's ancestral, if you will, sheep ranch straddled Craven Creek. And I think it's a small place in a big land, just like much of the interior West. And I think there are thousands of families just like ours that are tied to places like that. And mm-hmm. I think that makes those families special.
Tell us about your grandfather, the man you're named after, Walt Gasson. Old Walt, right?
Old Walt, yeah. Uh-huh. I never met the man. Never saw his face, never heard his voice. He died many years before I was born. But he was a man of the sagebrush sea. He was a stockman by his own description. And for much of his life, he worked for other people, big sheep outfits in southwestern Wyoming. His job as a foreman was to ride from one band of sheep to the next and make sure the herder was still there, make sure they had the supplies they needed, help them in any way he could. Remarkable thing about Old Walt, he was a small man, not very big, like many of the really good cowboys I know. And he was at heart a buckaroo. He really was. He always rode an ugly horse. I have no pictures of my grandfather riding a beautiful horse. They're always ugly. And my grandson pointed out to me one day when we were talking about that, he said, well, Grandpa, maybe it was more important that he had a horse that could go 30 miles without needing a drink of water than to have a pretty horse.
Good point.
Yeah.
There's also historical references from the early 1900s around the town of Green River, where your parents were from.
Yeah.
Tell us about, I guess, those early days, and tell us about your mom and dad in Green River.
My mom and dad grew up in a one-stoplight town. I grew up in a one-stoplight town before Green River began to grow rapidly in the 70s and 80s. But it was a railroad town. It was a blue-collar town above all else. And mm-hmm. it was a place that was ideal for a young man like me or a young person really of that time. Because I tell people, Grady, that I could have taken off walking or ridden my horse from my mom's back door in Green River to either Idaho, Utah, or Colorado on public land unimpeded.
Wow.
I had as much freedom growing up in the 50s and 60s in Green River, Wyoming, as a young Shoshone boy might have had a century and a half before.
Wow.
And I think that experience, that degree of freedom, and that kind of connection to the land, multi-generational, I guess, connection to the land, is something that has value in a place like the place where we live.
I guess your mom wore a lot of different hats, but she was also a librarian.
She was.
And
she
there's was. There's actually a room in the Rock Springs Library named after her?
There is, the Grace Gasson Room in the White Mountain Library, where I'll be doing a reading here on the 15th of May. Very much looking forward to that. My mom was an interesting story. She grew up in what we would consider now in abject poverty. She never met her father. Her father died during the great influenza epidemic of 1918. She was born in January of 1919, and he had died months before.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom was devastated. She had difficulty bonding with this little baby. But as this little girl grew up, she grew up with a love of books and learning.
Mm-hmm.
And during the Great Depression in her teenage years, landed a job through one of the great New Deal programs at the library. And she came to love that work. When high school came, she had a full ride academic scholarship offer from UW. Passed it up because her $50 a month salary was all that was keeping her and her mom above water.
Wow.
Went on, rose to be the chief librarian of all the libraries in Sweetwater County, and then got married and dropped out of the workforce. Later came back in and rose again to be chief librarian in Sweetwater County, and built new libraries and built relationships that endure to this day.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm talking with Walt Gasson about his collection of essays titled Craven Creek from Wordsworth Publishing, available in Wyoming bookstores and online. Many of the essays explore the big, wonderful Wyoming backcountry, the mountain ranges, the wide open spaces, and the rivers, with stories from hunting and fishing trips. You mentioned in the essay about the Red Desert in the Haystacks elegy that perhaps 21st century America can't be expected to recognize things of intrinsic worth. Can you elaborate just a little on that thought?
I stole the term, quite honestly. You know, Wally McCrae, old Eastern Montana rancher and friend, did a poem called Things of Intrinsic Worth. And I think what he was trying to say is that sometimes we lose track of things that have real value. And in that particular essay, we're talking about wilderness with a small W, a place that took all day to get to in 1965. And my dad, Gus, and I will go to the Haystacks every so often. He loved the place because it was so far from any place. You had to work to get there. It was actually a place that Butch Cassidy and the Wild Bunch used as a campsite because they could get high in elevation and watch their back trail to see if anybody was following them. But it was a trip for me from the 20th century into the 19th century, when everything was done by horse, when wild country was wild in 100 miles in any direction.
And one of the final essay in the collection, The Home Place. Tell us about the history of that.
To answer that, Grady, I need to tell you a little bit about my parents. My father was a quintessential son of the sagebrush sea. He was as comfortable halfway between Jeffrey City and Wamsutter as he was in his own living room. My mom, on the other hand, did not come from a family where the outdoors was a thing. And so upon their marriage, he concluded pretty quick that he was going to have to figure out a way, if they were to enjoy wild country together, he was going to have to figure out how to put a roof over her head, because she wasn't into to sleeping on the ground. She wasn't into cooking over a fire. She needed at least a modicum of civilization to be happy there. And so they hit upon the idea of building a cabin on the west side of the Wind Rivers in the Bridger Teton National Forest. And they went in partnership with my aunt and uncle, my dad's sister and her husband, and built this 20 by 30 one-room cabin from logs that were logged nearby. Fireplace came from rocks from South Pass or Big Sandy. And that became and remains the spiritual center of the Gasson family universe. I tell people that, you know, it's kind of like the family axe. We still got the same axe that we had, you know, in 1958 when they built the cabin. We've only replaced the handle twice and the head three times. The pieces and parts have been replaced. The article, the genuine article, if you will, remains the same. And if you ask any of my children, what are your best memories of growing up? They will tell you a story about the cabin in the Big Sandy Country.
Craven Creek is a collection of essays by Walt Gasson, available now. Walt, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. Thank you very much.
The pleasure is mine, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Open Spaces. The entire show and all the stories you heard here can be found on our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. It can also be found wherever you get your podcasts, and we post all our stories on the station's social media platforms. Thanks to Caitlin Tan, our audio producer, and Ivy Engel, our digital and social media producer. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.